Today on Changing Course, we're talking with Dr. Shellyn Wu from the University of Tennessee History Department. Her new book is called Empires of Coal, Fueling China's Entry into the Modern World Order. Dr. Wu, thanks for joining us. How did you choose this particular topic for a book?
I actually started reading the travel diaries of Ferdinand von Richthofen, this German geographer, and found him just to be really fascinating. A lot of really interesting details. He actually also was in the American West for a number of years in the early 1860s. And just kind of a character. He traveled around with a team of coolies carrying all his stuff and the rock samples that he collected. And American brandy, whiskey that he liked, Indian tea because he thought Chinese tea was too weak, and also liked to take out this North German Federation flag when he ate meals. He was a strong nationalist, Prussian nationalist. So it's a really interesting guy, and he also happens to write a lot about coal in China.
I mean, tea was a big deal in terms of exports in China and a sort of a game changer in its own right. How did coal change the game in China and the world differently from, say, tea or porcelain or other things?
Well, that's one of the things that I argue in my book, is that Richthofen was an important figure in changing that perception of China in the West. It is, you're absolutely right that this is a... China was known for its tea, its porcelain, its luxury exports. And in the late 19th century, however, partly because of Richthofen's writings, those in the Western powers, England, France, the U.S., began to see China also as a depository of vast mineral wealth. And this is a very, very important transition in this perception of China.
Didn't he also name the Silk Road the Silk Road?
He did. Yes, he's responsible. He did a number of expeditions, including to Western China, and he is the one who came up with a theory of loess, which is this thick covering of yellowish silt-like material in northern China, but also in the Mississippi River Valley. Also, there is silt in Europe, and he is the one who said that, no, this is actually carried by wind from Central Asia.
What's going on at the late end of the Qing dynasty that makes this transition so ripe?
What you see also happening with provincial leaders at the end of the Qing dynasty, so this is the late 19th century and the first decade of the 20th century, is that many of these officials were interested in establishing industrial enterprises. So things like iron foundries and modern coal mines and these steamship companies, railroads. So for at least some of these officials, they recognize that this is the way forward to industrialize, and they were building these industries.
Did it change the power structure in China when you had all the discovery of all these great mineral deposits and these reserves?
Well, that's partly the issue at that time, is that it's not only necessary to have these deposits, but you also need a lot of mining equipment. You also need, very importantly for coal supplies, you need to have railroads. So a cheap means of transporting these deposits. So what I discuss in my book is how there were all these problems and also financial difficulties. And this is also why many of these early Qing industries hired Western engineers to head the technical aspects of these developments. It was certainly for many of these Western powers, and I discuss in my book how the German government in particular, they really sponsored these engineers and they paid them and hoping that they would work for Chinese industries and bring business to German businesses and German industries, especially with the order of heavy machinery. You have then a lot of these Western powers who were very, very interested in this development. As they rightly saw, this is going to be a huge business and would be a boon for these industries.
What do you see as the long-term effect of this period as it is playing out now?
Well, I think what you see happening now is that Chinese companies are very interested in natural resources in Africa and South America, and they are investing, much like the Western powers did in the end of 19th century China, they're investing overseas in these mineral resources. So what I argue in my book, that this transition, this idea that we need to control these natural resources, comes from this period and of the interaction with Western imperialism.
And where do you see China going 10, 20 years from now with this? I mean, do you see them getting more and more control over the worldwide minerals and resources?
Well, it's hard to say. I think as a historian, I certainly don't want to, you know, I don't have a magic eight ball and that will tell me what's going to happen. The events that I cover in my book from the late 19th century and early 20th century certainly shows that, yes, countries are interested in getting a hold of these mineral deposits, but often these are very complex issues, and it has a lot to do with domestic then response, as it did in China.
The title of your book is Empires of Coal, Fueling China's Entry into the Modern World Order, 1860 to 1920. What exactly happened in 1860 for you to start the book there? And if you could also answer what happened in 1920 for you to stop the book there.
Well, 1860 is towards the tail end of the largest rebellion in human history, probably the Taiping Rebellion. And what you see starting from around the 1860s is when the Qing provincial officials who were interested in reform began to build, import Western technology and to build these enterprises. The Qing collapses in 1911, and 1920 is around the period when you see the institution of the China Geological Survey, and it was not controlled by foreign powers, but rather by Chinese geologists. So one of the things I argue in my book is that a lot of this exploration of minerals has to do with the Geological Survey and also with the development of geology in China.
What classes are you teaching here this semester at UT?
I am teaching a class on modern China and also a history capstone course research seminar on a history of energy, on coal, dams, and the atom. So actually, we're using a lot of these local resources available in Hodges Library of TVA papers. We're doing a field trip to Oak Ridge. So we're exploring all the various ways that history of energy played out, but also with all of these great resources that are right available here in Knoxville.
It seems to me that there obviously is so much more interest in China now at this university and others, of course, and around the world. Have you noticed the same thing?
Yeah, you know, I've noticed also this growing interest, especially with the Confucius Institute here. I see a lot of students showing up, and many more students are taking Chinese. And so in my modern China course, actually, I've noticed this even from the first time I taught the course when I started in 2011, that I have more students who are learning Chinese and who are just really interested in the topic.
Are there any interesting events coming up this fall that we should know about that for those interested in China?
Yes. So there will be several events. One is on October 5th, a Monday evening. So UT is taking part in this Chinatown Hall event. It includes both a national element, this webcast, that discussing this topic this year is of a panel discussion on Chinese investment in the U.S., and among those present for the webcast will be Treasury Secretary Rubin, former Treasury Secretary Rubin, and Mayor Day from Alabama, Thomasville. A speaker will also come on campus to talk about Chinese businesses and also working in China. And another event on October 8th will be Professor Michael Pewitt, who is a professor of history at Harvard University. And he is very well known. He was featured in The Atlantic a couple of years ago for teaching the second largest class at Harvard of over 700 undergraduate students on ancient Chinese philosophy. So I think that will be very impressive for our students as well. And also, Pewitt is actually a Tennessee native. He grew up in the Nashville area.
Well, Dr. Shellen Wu, thanks for stopping by today.
Thank you so much, Todd.